Welcome to the Mobile Game Dev Playbook. This podcast is brought to you in association with Game Refinery. Join us as we uncover the latest trends in mobile game design.
Hello and welcome to the Mobile Game Dev Playbook. This is a podcast that provides insights into what makes a great mobile game, what is and is not working for mobile game designers, and all the latest trends in mobile game design. In today's episode, we're going to take a look back at what's been happening in 2020, and in particular, some of the key geographic differences, notably between the US and the Chinese markets. I'm your host, John Jordan, and joining me this week, we have three experts from Game Refinery, each of which cover a different location. So first up, we have Kalle Helkkinen, who is the chief China analyst at Game Refinery. How's it going, Kalle?
Very good. Thank you. How about you?
Yeah, not bad at all. And then we also have Wilhelm Voutilainen, who is the Western Market Chief Analyst. How's it going, Wilhelm?
Yeah, I'm doing really well. Thank you.
Good. And finally, we have Erno Kiiski, who is the US Chief Game Analyst. How's it going, Erno?
I'm good, good. Thank you.
Good. So we've covered off the world. Each of you are going to be kind of delving into your areas of expertise through the podcast. But I guess we can't really cover 2020 without the covering kind of COVID, which obviously isn't a direct impact on mobile game design, but clearly has had a massive impact on games in general and the way we've been playing mobile games. So can we kick off by just looking at kind of the impact that the kind of COVID and the various lockdowns have had on how people have been playing games?
Definitely, sure. So this has definitely been a very interesting year for mobile gaming for many reasons, but one of them has definitely been the impact of COVID. And I think game developers have been super eager to find ways to boost engagement in their games. They know that people now have more time in their hands. They know that their consumer power is relatively high as the players, people who play games, are very engaged with games. So people have turned to games to answer to sort of to the demand of social interaction and stuff like that. So one of the sort of manifestation of that, what we've seen, is the sort of increase of these sort of modes and instances that allow players to basically hang out in the game. So interact with the game outside the actual core gameplay. And some examples that come to my mind is that you have these sort of like a lobby areas or instances where players can hang out, they can show off their cosmetics, they can play mini games, chat with each other. This is especially popular in China, for example, in games like QQ Dancer, Audition Online, and QQ Speed. Another thing is that many games have tried to find ways to emulate things that people used to do before the pandemic. So before, for example, like going to concerts, for example, or going to movies. So games like Fortnite and Roblox, for instance, have been trying to take advantage of this and create sort of virtual opportunities for players to do these things inside games.
Yeah, definitely. It seems that these changes may have happened over time, but I think there's been an acceleration of moves towards this kind of metaverse, kind of idea of metaverses. So as you rightly put it, it's interesting that people like to play in games. There's specific things that you do in the game, but also there's kind of, as soon as you stop, there's also a lot of time you just hang out in the game and you're still in the game. You're still maybe talking about what happened in the thing you just did, but it's that kind of much more kind of social activity. Have we seen any differences in kind of geography? Have kind of Western markets, US markets behaved differently from Asian Chinese markets?
Well, I would say there are a lot of similarities in that sense that if we look at, for example, what Kalle just mentioned, different kind of social platforms and stuff like that coming to the games. And that can be also, I would say, tied into this kind of like a viral hit, social viral hits that we have seen in the market during the pandemic. So Fall Guys was a good example from PC console side, but now after that, Among Us. Really simple experiences, but the whole key of those games is the social aspect of the game. So I don't know if there wouldn't be a pandemic. I think Among Us could have been a viral hit in a similar manner, but I think the whole pandemic and the need for the social experience actually boosted, for example, the virality of Among Us, what it had. So you can go with your friends and play together and stuff like that.
Absolutely. No, I think it will probably kind of take us a while to kind of unpick kind of what has happened, because I think in general, some of the figures I've seen across all gaming is like 2020, you know, in terms of kind of revenue is up like 20%, something like that. And I guess we've seen in general games companies stocks do well, and generally people thinking that's a good thing. But I guess there will be different kind of influences. I mean, do you think, have we seen anything yet in terms of game kind of games adding new features that maybe they wouldn't have done? Have we seen different sorts of kind of in-game features become more popular? Is there any kind of data points around that?
Well, directly tied to pandemic, it can be really hard to say that, okay, which features were brought or they changed their roadmap, for example, because of a pandemic. But of course, the first thing comes to mind is the location-based games, and we're looking at the Pokemon Go and so on, when they introduced their raid passes and these kind of like a tickets that allow you to play anywhere, so you don't have to necessarily move around. And if you look at the numbers of Pokemon Go, for example, you would think maybe that, okay, a location-based game, that it's the one that takes the biggest hit from the pandemic, but actually they have had their like record quarters now, so they were able to kind of like turn around the really tough situation for them introducing a specific type of features, as an example.
And I think when the pandemic started, a lot of games were giving out these sort of a bonus or extra rewards to make sure that people were coming back to the games and play them. So I think that was one effect as well. And going to the China side of things, this is not perhaps feature related, but just one thing that came to my mind is that in February and March, when the situation was really sort of hot in China, something interesting that we noticed was that some of the mahjong games in China experienced really significant revenue bumps. So, for example, QQ Mahjong had almost 700% downloads increase, also on the download side. So it was definitely a signal that people were seeking for sort of virtual options to play mahjong, which traditionally has been something that you do, obviously, in person.
And I guess that's a good point, because that kind of, I'm guessing, not having any specific knowledge about the demographics of people who play mahjong in China, but I'm guessing that part of what we're seeing is also a, you know, a demographic of people who are very busy out doing things, working mainly, I suppose, but a group of kind of probably older people who certainly wouldn't define themselves as gamers suddenly had a lot more time on their hands. And it was kind of like, what do we do? Well, obviously we kind of watch box sets, but equally people who maybe played, you know, a bit of Candy Crush or those very kind of casual games suddenly had a lot more time. And you started to have kind of different groups of society suddenly gaming like they were, you know, teenagers, because what else could they do?
Yeah, for sure. I think that's really something that happened.
Cool. So I think maybe the pandemic will come back into our other discussions, but I think, you know, we can kind of park the majority of that there and kind of move on. So every year there's always some big releases. What are the kind of games that have caught your eye in terms of either doing something kind of new in terms of game design or the games that have just you know, had a big impact in terms of having millions of players and generating millions of dollars? What are the big ones?
Yeah, well, of course, we're following the markets quite closely here in Game Refinery, and following the games that make the impact and checking out kind of like what they do. That's all like our core business. So, of course, like everybody knows, Genshin Impact being the big one everybody talks about. Huge hits, huge game, really kind of like a interesting approach to the mobile gaming in that sense, that they focus so much on the core gameplay experience. It feels like playing a console game, but then they have the free-to-play systems and gachas and free-to-play mechanics built on top of that to monetize the game and so on. So that's definitely, of course, a big thing. Then there are plenty other games. So League of Legends was, for example, just soft launched, not globally launched yet. Really interesting game coming up pretty soon. Then games like Harry Potter, Puzzles and Spells, Match 3 game from Zynga. They were innovating also quite a bit on the core Match 3, kind of like a puzzle mechanics, how the actual puzzles work and stuff like that. And then we have other examples like, I think one of the most interesting games of the year was Redecor, which was, it's actually this quite small Finnish company that made this like a decorational game in similar manner as Design Home from Glue. And so basically you're decorating homes and stuff like that. And now it's really, really challenging the big company of Glue on that genre, on that type of games. It's currently in top grossing, I think, 50 almost, 50 to 100.
Yeah, it's breaking the 50.
Yeah, so it's really, really like a coming out of nowhere and being a huge success for a small company's game. And then I would say a highlight maybe Evermerge. It's a game from Big Fish Games, so it's a merge game, kind of like a genre that's a bit trending, I would say, at the moment. So games where you merge different things and you kind of like complete these puzzles and stuff like that. So Merge Dragons from Gram Games was the big hit, been on the market for years, but now we have seen new competitors in that that market, and for example Evermerge being one of the most successful competitors in that category. And then maybe as the last one, I would want to highlight Seven Deadly Sins, which came during the early 2020. It's a turn-based RPG utilizing the popular anime IP, and that's been a huge success in the West and actually all around the markets in Japan and in China. So it's one of the most successful turn-based RPGs currently in all of the three markets.
Okay, so we've got a few to kind of work our way through there in different genres. So I guess, yeah, Genshin Impact is the kind of the obvious kind of big highlight one. I mean, I guess it's, you know, it plays into lots of different themes. We'll dig into the kind of the game design side of things. But I guess the key thing is, as we've seen with kind of Fortnite, it is another game that is kind of platform agnostic, I suppose, to some degree, in the sense that it's available on PC, console and mobile. I mean, do you now think at that top level that that sort of development is now the way it needs to be for these big companies to kind of reach the big markets and generate billions of dollars? Because it's still, up to this point, certainly in the West, you know, we've kind of had this idea that kind of PC and console games are different, and then you do a mobile kind of version of it. I mean, that's still kind of the Call of Duty, still very successful. But do you think now we're moving where mobile just becomes, where the platform you're deploying your game on kind of becomes irrelevant?
Well, I think that obviously not all game developers have the resources and the muscles to do the same thing that miHoYo did with Genshin Impact. But for me, definitely, it showcased that it is definitely possible to make a successful free-to-play game and still sort of deliver a gamer's game, as to say, or HD or AAA experience, however you want to wrap it up. So for me, it definitely was closing the gap between HD and mobile. And I guess we could talk hours about Genshin, but like the sort of the top observations that I'd like to make is that as a gamer, I'm super happy that we have these kind of experiences available, and certainly personally gives me a weapon to counter arguments along the lines of like free to play is the dark side of gaming and stuff like that. But however, if we put our business lenses on and look at the game, I think the game's long-term trajectory is definitely still a big question mark. And I think it's safe to say that they need to address issues like endgame content to retain players. But yeah, it's going really well for them. And the good thing is that they have a solid foothold in all the major markets, including China, Japan, and US. So that's very nice thing for them and gives them a good geographical balance for their revenue stream. So looking good.
But yeah, I would like to add to that still that when thinking about kind of like are more and more companies gonna go that way, I personally think that at least the huge success that Genshin has had basically in all the platforms, so it's not just a huge success or huge hit in mobile, it has been such a huge hit everywhere. I think especially the big companies now are definitely like thinking about that approach much more. Could that be the way for our game, for example, to approach the market, or how to build the game, for example, and like mentioned earlier, the game is so focused on the core gameplay aspect of it's kind of like a, if you compare it to many other, let's say, action RPGs that has been in the mobile game market, those have been more focused on the meta layer, so the actual core gameplay has been like autoplay and stuff like that. But looking at Genshin and those kind of experiences, so could there be a possibility of kind of like a building more these kind of like a core gameplay focused games with kind of like a, this RPG gacha style metas or other free to play metas on top of that? So I think it definitely encourages a lot of developers to maybe try that. So I guess that we're gonna see much more of that kind of approach in the future also.
No, it's a good point. It is in kind of every respect. I guess it's kind of demonstrated the kind of the best of all worlds, in the sense that it's, you know, it has that kind of console flair, and if you just see a video of it, you go, that looks amazing, which mobile games have always kind of struggled with, just because they're not really built in that way. So that allows it to have that kind of like immediacy where people just go, oh, that's great, I'm, you know, and it's available on everything. But then it also has kind of the, I guess, the what we would see as the best of mobile, which is this kind of monetization, which you can choose to do or choose not to do. You can choose, you know, to spend a lot or choose to spend nothing. And obviously, you know, famously, it is, you know, I don't quite know what the overall budget is, but it's been rumored, yeah, it's over $100 million worth of development budget, which is, you know, obviously not many companies can handle that sort of budget for a potentially quite a risky game. You know, it's worked globally, and I guess it's kind of the it's taken, you know, China has been very good at building PC games and mobile games in the free to play experience as well. I don't know whether a Western company would quite have come up with the mix. So I guess it's good, you know, for game designers, it's a good one to get deep into, to kind of understand how all games are going, not just mobile games. I think, you know, as much as we love mobile games, games are becoming games, aren't they? And these kind of these kind of features and these elements are just becoming kind of mixed up. Some other interesting ones you kind of pointed to. So I guess Harry Potter Puzzle and Spells came out from Zynga this year. And again, talking about big budgets, it's interesting that they were quite open saying it's the biggest, I think the biggest development they'd ever had. They didn't say how much it cost, but and I guess it kind of comes back into kind of taking something that, you know, can be a big hit, you know, with IP, and then taking a lot of game design elements that are kind of rife in the game space. So can we dig into that a little bit? How on the game design side, what are they doing that's different, or are they just using the kind of conventional kind of tools that a mobile game designer would have?
Yeah. So if you're thinking about Match 3 puzzle games, what they're doing or innovating a lot is, of course, on the core gameplay and the level mechanics of how the puzzles work. So in that game, basically, you have these kind of like, you unlock these spells that helps you through the levels. So, for example, you unlock some spells from Harry Potter universe that I can't remember. but yeah, you unlock a lot of spells, and then you can use those in the core gameplay. So for example, you can levitate some flowers out of the game board or stuff like that. So there are a lot of kind of like the whole spell system, how it works, that's quite innovative and unique. A bit hard for me to explain without actually showing you the screen, but the whole core play mechanic of how they use the spells in the puzzles and how you unlock the spells and you go through the through the puzzles. That's something that basically has never been seen in match three puzzle games before.
Hmm. Good. And I have to say, again, moving on a different level to Genshin Impact, it is just a beautiful looking game. Obviously, it's not a 3D action game; it's a match three game. But it's an extremely polished kind of product that I guess like most people, I'm not a Harry Potter fan, but a lot of people are Harry Potter fans. But I'm not a Harry Potter fan. I kind of know a bit about Harry Potter. I've seen some of the films, and you just kind of feel they've taken that IP and they've integrated it. In a quite a deep way, which is not the case. And it is interesting. I think we'll go on to talk towards the end of the podcast about games coming out next year. And it's interesting how IP, big IP, is becoming an increasing part of it. There were some other games I wanted to cover that weren't mobile games, but I think that they're interesting as we kind of review the year. So again, they've been mentioned, I guess, already. So we have Among Us and Fall Guys, which are initially mobile games. I mean, Fall Guys doesn't have a mobile version yet, I don't think, even. But they've been kind of what you described as viral hits. So is that just because we've been in lockdown and looking for kind of softer experiences to play, or is there something deeper going on there in terms of the game design that they're offering and the experience?
Well, when we're looking at, for example, Among Us, well, it's extremely simple, this sort of asymmetrical party game, where, well, the core game is super simple. You know, you have the impostors and the rest of the players. The rest of the players are sort of doing tasks and are trying to escape from a ship, and then they're trying to sort of find out who the impostor is, which sort of, those are often the core game ideas of different party games. But when we are looking at the sort of the feature set of the game, it's extremely simple, so it's sort of carried by the really fun concept in the core game. And of course, as it's a huge viral hit, it's been in the top download charts for a while now, but it's going to be really interesting to see if, for example, top streamers, what happens when they sort of run out of the content and stop doing content around Among Us, what will happen to them. Because right now, when looking at, for example, the monetization model of the game, it's basically there's a little bit of ad monetization, but the main part is the decorative items like hats, pets, and so on. But when looking at comparing to the other game, top-grossing games that are monetizing with decorated items as well, the Among Us monetization is really weak right now, and which could be improved further. For example, adding more different kind of skins, effects, and so on.
Yeah, and I would add also on that kind of like the whole this genre of viral hit social games. So, for example, as you mentioned, the Fall Guys, and we have seen Fall Guys was a huge hit, and everybody was talking about it all around, even like outside of the game industry, it was everywhere. But now I think the trend has been going downwards, and it actually has surprised me how long Among Us has been on the top and is still on the top and everywhere on the social medias and so on. So if you look at those games, it, like Wilhelm mentioned, they are really, really light on monetization, really, really light on the like the progression mechanics, really, really light on the like long-term possibility for the long-term kind of like a gameplay. So if you look at, for example, Among Us, it's about 50 cents per download in mobile, in iOS, in US, which is not much, of course. But of course, as it's generating crazy amounts of downloads, it's power, even way up there on the crossing charts. But if we are looking at the game, if it doesn't bring anything, I don't see it, to be honest, kind of like these are kind of like this one hit wonder, so to speak. So I'm very suspectful of kind of like how these type of games can actually sustain. And when they have this one hit, then they of course have to be bring another one something comes and replaces Among Us. Like in the PC side, there's this horror game called Phasmophobia, yeah. I think, which is now the big hit on Twitch, and it's generating this huge virality behind it. So it's definitely a tactic to go to make these type of experiences. But personally, I feel these are more like a genie in a bottle. They had kind of like a perfect idea that fitted the current market situation, and then a little bit of luck. For example, like with Among Us, it's already a couple of years old game, and now it just became a viral hit. So it's kind of like an interesting type of games, because it's really hard to make any conclusions or kind of like draw lines on what type of games you should be making, or this type of games you should be making, because they are these type of viral hits that can be really, really, really hard to kind of like do again.
Do you guys think that someone could take the sort of basic concept of Among Us and, you know, the core gameplay design and make it a proper free-to-play game with more robust feature set, with more like guild mechanics and more different kinds of PvP modes and stuff?
Well, right now, there has been some games, like huge games like Roblox, which basically in the Roblox you can create millions of different kind of games. So there has been one of the most popular ones has actually been a total copy of the Among Us. But why not really? That could be that you could actually make a game just literally Among Us, name it something else. But I think there has been some copies in the China market.
Yeah. It was the same thing that happened after Fall Guys. So like one of the things that is included in our job description is that we go through the top 500 grossing and download games and look at them. And in the download side of things, you do see a lot of these sort of like copycat games of different games that are popular in the West but haven't been officially released in the Chinese market. So, for example, with Fall Guys, there were loads of Fall Guys copies in the download charts when that was a big hit, and then obviously when and still is Among Us has been around. So not long after it became successful, we already were able to witness copycats of that in the Chinese download charts.
Good point. So it's always interesting that I guess there's in games there's kind of complexity versus accessibility, and kind of monetization potentially versus retention, and those are always kind of slightly in tension. And I guess it's the you need to probably go for one or the other. And I guess the games we've been talking about, you know, that have been very successful commercially have gone for complexity and monetization, and some of the other kind of, you know, I think what's nice with Among Us and Fall Guys is the concepts are just kind of good. They kind of came out and they didn't add loads of things to them in the beginning, so that got them the virality. I guess, as you say, it would be a different sort of experience if you had Among Us with guilds and things like kind of persistence. That would be interesting. I guess it would appeal to some people, but it wouldn't have got viral in the same way. So I guess that's a little bit about kind of product kind of lifespan. You know, having the ability to launch something and then think of looking at what audience you've got and where you want to go with it from there.
Yeah, definitely. I just want to add. So it will be interesting to see. Of course, Among Us they are a super small team, but it's interesting to see because they were actually developing Among Us too, but now they went away from that and wants to focus on the first Among Us that's already a viral hit. So really interesting to see what kind of plans they have for kind of like the long-term progression or what they're going to do with the game.
Okay, so should we move on and kind of look into our crystal balls and think about what's going to be happening next year? I mean, it's always hard to do predictions. I guess if we were doing this podcast at this point last year, none of us would have got anything right. but we know there's a lot of games, a lot of kind of cool games that are in soft launch, so they're available in certain territories for you know, different sorts of testing. So what games are you kind of looking forward to, and why do they stand out? Why are they ones that you are kind of expecting to do well in the next 12 months?
Sure. So yeah, there's loads of interesting games coming up in 2021. I'd say some of the most interesting ones are probably a couple of MMOs that are rumored to be coming out soon. So Summoner's War Chronicles, for example, which is supposedly a prequel to the popular Summoner's War game, and it's going to be an MMO RPG. Then we have Warhammer Odyssey, which is also a take on the MMO genre. Interesting with the format Warhammer IP, and I think these two games pretty nicely follow the trend of bringing these sort of PC console HD IPs to the mobile side as well. And in terms of the MMO space, it's going to be interesting that if they are going to be able to sort of crack the MMO code in the West, where it traditionally has been a little bit tough for them.
Personally, I'm waiting like a Genshin Impact of the MMORPGs to like hit the Western markets. That's what I'm waiting.
Yeah. And also on the shooter side, we had Code Live, which is probably going to be an interesting one. It's from the PUBG team, so it will be interesting to see. But
yeah, right now we made the genre snapshot reveal for the shooter genre earlier this year, and what we noticed there that right now the shooter genre, at least in the West, is not too saturated. There is not many new games actually. After COD Mobile and Juba Battle Royale, there has been no new top crossing shooter games released yet. So there is definitely space for more.
Yeah, definitely the game Kalle mentioned, it's really interesting. Coming from the PUBG Mobile team, that we know that they were basically one of the first ones when the Battle Royale craze started on mobile and brought PUBG to mobile. And now it's a huge, huge hit. So really interesting game for me personally also. It's kind of like this, if I understood correctly, kind of like a survival, a bit like Left 4 Dead on PC type of shooter experience that they are working on, and they're soft launching that. So that's a really interesting title for the next year, for example.
Yeah, and talking about the shooter still, of course, Apex Legends Mobile coming up.
Yeah, that's definitely one of those. The rumors about the mobile version has been around for ages, and it's also following the trend of bringing these successful console PC IPs to mobile. But let's see how that pans out.
For a genre like kind of Battle Royale that's had a good kind of couple of years now, game developers on mobile have looked at it from different angles. So we've gone through the kind of the realistic stuff. We've gone through various, you know, kind of IP things. I guess we've ended up not on mobile yet, but kind of Fall Guys, these very different sort of takes, these very kind of cute takes on it. Is there still a lot left to experience? Battle Royale to me, I wouldn't say I'm a particular fan of the genre. I mean, I played the usual suspects, but is there a big addressable audience that are looking for something new, or is everyone sort of happy with what they've got?
Yeah, I think the base, so got like basic Battle Royale experience where you drop like 100 people to the map and then they fight out and so on and last man standing. I think that is already like the big games like PUBG and then Garena Free Fire and games like that. At the moment, they are kind of dominating that. So making an exactly game like that, I don't see it working very well. But there are ways to kind of like a twist the Battle Royale idea. So like you mentioned, of course, Fall Guys, totally different type of idea. And I think one good example is the PUBG Mobile. They just launched this Metro Royale expansion to their game. So that game mode, it's basically a whole new game mode, but it works exactly like... if you know the popular PC game called Escape from Tarkov. So that's been a huge hit on PC and big game on Twitch and stuff like that. So they actually released this game mode that's really similar to Escape from Tarkov to PUBG Mobile. And that kind of like twists, I think there are still plenty of life in that genre, but this kind of like the basic idea of just scavenging and then last man standing and stuff like that. I think that can be really hard to kind of like take the market away from the big boys at the market at the moment.
Yeah, I totally agree with Erno that I think a lot of the Battle Royale games have been experimenting with other things as well than just the traditional Battle Royale game mode that we know. So, for example, obviously we all know that Fortnite, for example, have has this metaverse thing going on, and as we talked about, the sort of hangout spaces and stuff like that. So they are clearly, at least some of the Valorant games are trying to find other ways to engage the players in the game other than just the core gameplay.
So I've been looking at a quick overview of kind of games I saw that was in soft launch. I'll read some of them out and see if you can see the trend that I'm going for here. So we have Marvel, Realm of Champions, Lord of the Rings, Rise to War, Marvel Duels, Harry Potter, Magic Awakened, Disney Mirrorverse, Lego Star Wars Battles, Blade Runner Rogue, and there's another unnamed Star Wars game. So those are obviously not all the games in soft launch, but it seems to me that next year is going to have a lot of games from the same IP. is IP going to actually become a bit of a problem? I mean, we've seen this in the past. Lots of, you know, it's not new, obviously, that we've had a lot of IP mobile games, but it seems like next year, if all those games come out, that's quite a lot of games using the same IP and probably the same sorts of games. Is IP, do you think, becoming an issue in the sense that it's kind of harder to put in innovative game design in an IP?
Yeah, well, of course, the saturation might be a problem for some cases on some IPs. That we have seen so many games with a similar IP and similar ideas. But then again, if we think about many kind of like the mobile, how the mobile game systems work, for example, in a, let's say, character collector RPGs. The whole idea is collecting characters, and when you have already kind of like a emotional attachment to the characters and so on, so of course the IP usually kind of like organically helps quite a bit on the kind of like the what kind of game we are building. But definitely, it might become a little bit of issue if we get like 50 Marvel games per year and so on. But at least at the moment, if you look at the, let's say, new successful games in, for example, in RPGs, many of them already use the IP just because of the reasons I mentioned, that the whole monetization is based on character collection, and then you have more incentives on the character side of collecting their characters and so on. So there are, of course, many, many ways to many angles to look at this, but it depends quite a bit.
Any of those IP based games, ones you would kind of be looking forward to play, other than just for kind of professional reasons? Are there any of them that kind of excite you? Because I do wonder, particularly for something like Marvel, which is now, you know, there's so many Marvel films, there's so many Marvel kind of games coming out that almost the thing you were using the IP for, which is to kind of gain recognition, almost becomes the issue, because you're kind of like, well, what part of the Marvel universe is this? And it actually adds, I think, to me a little bit, a certain level of confusion.
Yeah, in a way, I agree. But then in another way, we look at, for example, Marvel Comics and how that world has been living for kind of like ages, is that you have somebody read some comics and so on, and sometimes there's different metaverses and different kind of like universes and different stories on some other kind of like, or using the same characters on different stories and stuff like that. So yes, in a way they are all connected, but then in a way they are not connected. So there's also that angle that I see, especially for example with the comic book kind of like a parallel with the games and then the comics.
What do we think in terms of more generally looking at kind of genres we think might kind of either be not necessarily invented but kind of gain prominence again next year? I mean, we kind of mentioned it before, the League of Legends Wild Rift game currently in soft launch. Do we think, you know, there's always a bit of stuff going on with MOBAs. There's always kind of people trying to bring trying to feel like mobile and hasn't really had a really strong kind of MOBA game, particularly in the West, I suppose. Do we think that's something that the League of Legends team can actually kind of fulfill in 2021?
Well, right now, when looking at, for example, the Western market in terms of MOBA games, there has been one game pretty much dominating that space, which is the mobile game Bang Bang, which is right now it's actually doing quite well. It's been in the top grossing 100 for a long time now, and of course, In the China, we have the, I don't know, Valor, or in Chinese, Honor of Kings. We've been dominating that. But we have analyzed the Wild Rift right now, and I have to say personally, as a true like a MOBA PvP fan, the game feels super true to that sort of original PC game. So in gameplay wise, it's definitely, I think it's going to attract a lot of MOBA fans outside of mobile. But when it's going to be really interesting to see how it sort of how it can compete with Mobile Legends Bang Bang and Honor of Kings. For example, Mobile Legends Bang Bang just recently released an update where they sort of updated the game's graphics, so it looks really similar to the sort of the League of Legends now, and it has a really similar core gameplay, so it's just going to be really interesting. And right now, when comparing on a feature set level, Wild Rift, of course, it's still in the soft launch, but it's still, of course, it has a lot of champions and skins to collect, which is great in terms of monetization. But in terms of social features and, for example, gachas, it's still a bit lacking compared to those competitors. So, well, it's going to be really interesting to see when it gets released, hopefully next year, that's how it's going to affect the MOBA space.
Yeah, definitely. Like, if you look, like, the visuals of you put Mobile Legends and League of Legends side by side, they're super, super similar in that sense. And it's going to be really interesting to see, like, watch the pool of League of Legends IP, for example. First of all, does it pull players away from Mobile Legends, which is now getting, it has been growing basically year over year in the West also. Does it pull players away from that because it's really similar game and now you have the actual League of Legends on mobile? Do you go and play that if you have, let's say, played Mobile Legends for a couple of years and you have your characters and skins for that game and so on? Is the IP enough? Is the gameplay enough to pull the players away from Mobile Legends? And also really interesting to see kind of like what pull outside of the kind of like the players who have never played kind of like a MOBAs on mobile. So, for example, League of Legends, of course, everybody knows has the absolutely massive audience worldwide. So what's the pull of the mobile version kind of like for those players who haven't played MOBAs on mobile? So do kind of like a new audience get attracted to the mobile gameplay also? Really interesting.
From my side, it's definitely going to be very, very interesting to see how it will affect the competitive landscape in China, because as we all know, Honor of Kings is just a massive game in the market. And there have been some other games that have tried to take a piece of the MOBA pie in China out of Honor of Kings, but they haven't found that much success. But League of Legends is definitely a big IP in China as well, and if they go through with the launch in China, it will be extremely interesting to see how that will then pan out.
Yeah, absolutely. We have plenty to look forward to, and I guess the one thing you do have with these kind of IPs, or the whether it's an internal game IP or an external game IP, is the one great thing about mobile free to play is that they're very, very accessible. So when these things come out, we'll all be downloading them and deciding, on the basis of how they play, whether we enjoy the experience or not, whether to play them some more. So I guess that's the ultimate thing for game designers with mobile is you can address a massive audience and they can test very quickly whether they like what you've designed. Excellent, guys. Thank you very much for today. I think we could continue talking, but I think we've probably reached the limit of of what we should do, at least. Thank you to Calais, Wilhelm, and Erno.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And of course, thank you for listening. We publish podcasts on the latest mobile game development trends every month. So please do subscribe to the Mobile Game Dev Playbook. If you haven't already, we're available on all the usual podcast platforms. And why not give us a review? It's coming to the end of the year, you can feel not charitable, but you can feel like giving us a review, and that just helps other people who are interested in mobile game design find us on these podcast channels. But thank you so much for listening, and come back next time and see what's going on in the world of mobile games.